Hey there, and open open class. Hey there, and welcome to open class number 33. Is what I was trying to say. That I hope you're doing really, really well. Coach Michael is in California, I believe, this week, so that's why I'm here. He's usually doing Mondays, but I'm in his spot here doing this open class here. So hope you'll find it really helpful. As always, nothing is a medical advice, just general thoughts and comments that I hope will be really, really helpful. We have four messages, and I think this episode is going to be a lot of value, good variety of questions here. So let us actually before we jump in, announcement here. Sasha Stevens has confirmed she is going to be a podcast guest on this Friday. It's not gonna be a live one. I'm gonna record it Friday, but I'll probably just post it that Friday. Super excited for that. So definitely tune in, you know, be ready for a special episode with Sasha Stevens on this channel. I'm super excited. Super excited about that. Cool. All right. So with that said, let's see. Michael, we never got a chance for the interview. I still want in for sure. Just drop me an email, and and our email is this one, and I will send you the link. You can schedule it, and we will go from there. Very good. So, yes, let us look at some questions. First one is from Snehita, who is my previous client, actually, from Bad Time. Did really well, graduated, and then has some follow-up questions. Let's go over them. She says, hope you're doing good. I am. Thank you. I am following all your videos on YouTube. As always, great work there. Thank you very much. Coming to my insomnia, I'm having good nights of sleep for a few days and bad nights with a little sleep for a few days. Let me talk about bad nights here. As you said, I'm being friends with wakefulness. I'm watching TV on bad nights. I watch TV very long till I feel sleepy. When I feel sleepy, I'll switch off my TV and go to sleep. After 3 or 4 hours, I'll wake up. I'll wake up even on good nights of sleep, but it will be around 3 or 4 a.m. Then I will go back to sleep in about 30 minutes. And I see the sunrise, then I can fall back asleep. I'll have adrenaline rush and anxiety. And finally, I will not sleep back, and I will take up with foggy head and nausea. Any suggestions on how to handle or avoid this? Absolutely. And there's a little bit more, but I think we'll stop there for a second. Whenever, you know, insomnia really truly comes from a place of trying to avoid being awake. So whenever you hear that kind of like the voice in your head going like, how can I avoid this? Or how can I not have this? Then you kind of know you're on the wrong track. You're on that track of kind of like trying to avoid something, and what you resist persists, you know? So that is just a little pointer on that wording there. Before I forget it, I just want to say that I am becoming a more and more and more and more and more firm believer in that timeless way that Coach Michael always talks about. So when someone asks me, for example, what do I do when I wake up 3 a.m. or how is it that I always wake up 3 hours after I fell asleep or things of that nature, my default follow-up question becomes, how do you know it's 3 a.m.? Or how do you know you slept 3 hours? And there can be two ways of knowing that, of course. One is that somebody's actually checking the time, or it is that they're kind of just estimating that it feels like that. And in both scenarios, I think it's super helpful to go timeless, because insomnia comes from a place of trying to control something that cannot be controlled, which is sleep. The more it's like a soap, you know, the more you try to hold on to, the more slippery it becomes. You can only kind of just gently carrying it. That's the way. All right. So it is not very natural to check the time, because again, you of course want to have some control. It's very natural to want to have control, but it is the desire for control that is making you have trouble sleeping. So again, when somebody asks me what I do if I wake up 3 a.m. or why is it I always wake up 3 hours after I fall asleep? I'll go like, how do you know that? And so if you're checking a clock, you know, or have a tracker or something like that, that's pretty easy. Just don't do that. It is such a powerful way of letting go of control to not check what time it is, not know what time it is. Now, if it is more like in your mind that you just kind of, I think it's this much, or you estimate in your mind, you just can just, you can simply doubt that when your mind tells you it's probably 3 a.m. Then you go, but you don't know that. And you truly don't. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe you think you're super accurate, but just strongly doubt that. Doubt your ability to estimate how much you slept or what time it is. And when you do that kind of as an exercise, doubt it, doubt it, doubt it, you will find that your night will become timeless. You will have no clue what it is, what time it is, or how long you've slept, you know? So that, I think, is a very, 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 very important, the timeless night. And by the way, timelessness, I think, doesn't only apply to the night. It really is almost like a lifestyle in a way that you're timeless overnight. You don't know what clock time it is, but also you make a point of not knowing how many nights in a row you slept well or how many nights in a row you slept little. You don't know for how long you've had trouble sleeping. You have no particular goal in terms of I want to sleep well by this time. Timelessness, such an important way of not trying to have control, super powerful. I really think that will help you, Snehita. Okay, those were some general thoughts, but there were kind of two specific teachings that I really wanted to bring up today. And the first one is when it comes to this pattern of, some nights where you sleep well and some nights when you sleep a little. Take note of, by the way, if you go back the last couple of months, you'll find that I always use something subjective when it is a positive and something neutral when it is a negative, meaning I always say a good night and a night of little sleep, a great night and a sleepless night. Because when you describe it that way, little sleep or sleepless, there's no judgment or value there, right? So it's not at all as triggering as if you call something like horrible, terrible, absolutely no good, right? Versus a night where you slept well, you can call that wonderful, great, because that just kind of gives you a little bit extra like tailwind. So I think it's helpful. It may seem like splitting hairs, but I think it's really helpful to go that way, like subjective when it's good and just objective when, you sleep a little. Okay, another little pointer there. But that was not one of the two main teachings I want to talk about. The two main teachings I want to talk about here was attribution and how if you attribute a night of good sleep and a night of little sleep to the correct source, it can be everything works in your favor. It becomes really like learning. And we're going to use a piano analogy that I just thought about the other day to illustrate this. And the second teaching we're going to go over is, thresholds. We're going to talk about that briefly. All right. So Snehita describes here how she has a couple of nights where she sleeps well and a couple of nights where she sleeps little. So how can we use this to our favor, to our advantage, that is? So I was trying to learn this new piece on piano the other day, and I took note of how I was learning, okay? So I noticed that whenever I hit the right right notes, I was like, good, good, okay? Reinforcing that. Whenever I hit the wrong notes, I was like, no, that's incorrect. That's incorrect. And, there was this particular time, there was really no judgment there. It wasn't like when I hit the wrong notes, I didn't go like, wow, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get it right? Which sometimes we do, right? But it's good to try not to do that. I was not judging myself this time. And I think that was very good. And I think that applies as we move forward and apply this analogy to sleep as well. But what am I trying to say here? Well, when you learn something, that is how we learn, whatever it is, playing piano, reading, or like studying, or anything like that. It is when we do something right, the way we're supposed to do it, we reinforce that by going like, good, that's good, very good, okay? And when we do something the way we shouldn't, or the not ideal way of doing it, we go like, not like that, not like that, not like that. That is how you learn. Eventually, I got it, and I could play this piece really, fairly well, right? So insomnia is not a skill, of course, but coaching is a skill. Self-coaching is a skill. And you can really, really apply this piano analogy when it comes to like this fluctuation between nights where you sleep pretty well and nights where you sleep little. So how do you do that? Well, this is where correct attribution is of the utmost importance. And to illustrate that, we're going to quickly talk about Kim and Chloe. Kim is this person who absolutely needs to sleep exactly 7 hours, not a minute less. And she does everything she can to keep it that way, not accepting to sleep anywhere, any place less than this kind of 7 hours, let's say. And Chloe is the easygoing person who says, if I don't sleep much or if I sleep, either is okay to me. We all know that Kim is going to be the one who has real struggles a lot because she's not willing to have any type of lot. Like, she's not willing to lose a minute of sleep, okay? So how does this apply? Okay, where am I going with all of this? Well, it's this way. When you sleep well, you correctly attribute this to being like Chloe, being okay with being awake at night. Because if you're really trying to get control, that wouldn't have happened. So when you sleep well, you go, well done for being okay with having insomnia, for being okay with being awake at night. Well done for being non-resistant. Well done for being accepting. Well done for having a little attachment. Well done. You know, like you play the piano, you get the right tone. Well done. Well done. You're accepting. Great. Now, when you have a night where you sleep little, then you go, you attribute that to, you were more like Kim that time. You attribute that correctly to trying for sleep. You're like, okay, the reason I slept little, it was because I was trying to sleep. I was not willing to be awake at night. I wanted it too much that time. Without judgment, you just kind of, you know, just tell yourself that you correctly attributed to that. And when you do that over time, every single night becomes an opportunity to learn and reinforce this, okay? Every time you sleep well, attribute it to being like Chloe. Every time you sleep a little, you attribute it to being more like Kim. And then every night becomes a learning point, okay? I think this is the way. Definitely a very, very helpful teaching when you're in the spot you're in. So with that said, Snita, we're going to look at the second part of this email where Snita says, I also want to say that this is the third night in a row, which is a bad night. And last night was very bumpy. My anxiety was very high and I wasn't able to fall asleep. I'm being very positive, even though I'm having a bad night, but I lost my positive attitude with three bad nights in a row. I'm feeling very anxious since this morning. Do you think I can recover from this insomnia? Of course, absolutely, 100%. Everyone can, that is willing to do some learning, some unlearning, etc. But the teaching that I really thought was helpful here was actually very similar to the timeless night, which we just talked about, or timelessness, where you try as much as possible not to kind of keep track of how many nights has been of this or that. Very helpful. But the one I really wanted to just mention here was the threshold, the acceptability threshold. And I want to say that anybody that hears this, interested in this, check out Insomnia Insight number 333, where I talk at length about the acceptability threshold. It basically goes like this, that for a lot of people, you know, once you started learning more and you're starting your path through sleeping well, you go to a place where you're like, okay, if I have one sleepless night, not the end of the world, that's okay. You started to kind of accept that, but you still may have a threshold. You may say one sleepless night is okay, but not two. Two are okay, but not three, or something like that. I can be awake for 20 hours, but not 24. You know, you have kind of a threshold, you know, and that always works against you because that makes you more pressured to sleep, okay? And particularly when you come near your threshold, like it's been three nights, it's been four nights. Oh my gosh, you build more and more or more anxiety. So hard as it is really good to have no threshold, no particular expectations, and be like, whatever comes my way, that's it's okay. I'll be fine with that. So I think that acceptability threshold will really help you, Snita, on your path to sleeping well. And of course you'll get there. You're asking great questions. You're willing to learn. You'll do really, really well. So cool. Before we look at some other emails, let's see what's live here. Ascension says, I was having trouble sleeping with my girlfriend. She's snoring so loud. Can I get used to it or what should I do? This is a good one. And, you know, I would say sometimes the circumstance, which is snoring in this case, can be really troublesome. And it sometimes is the circumstance that is the problem, you know, and sometimes there is a circumstance like snoring, but it's maybe not that disruptive. And it's your reaction to it that is really driving your trouble sleeping. So I think it's never wrong to work on your reaction and see where that leads you. And how would you do that? Well, it would be something like acceptability, like kind of an acceptance approach saying, okay, she does snore And I can't really do anything about that at this point. So I'm not going to try to change it and be like, and kind of go towards like, if the snoring keeps me up all night, that's okay. I'll still have a good day tomorrow. If the snoring keeps me up, you know, not too much, that's okay. Like, kind of like that, you know, go towards acceptance or towards the snoring and see where that leads you. If you kind of find yourself after a couple of, you know, I don't know, a couple of days or a week or 2 weeks, something like that, finding like, you know what, I actually am not that bothered by it anymore. Perfect. But of course, there could be external circumstances that really are very disruptive. And in that case, you know, then this teaching doesn't apply. Let me put it that way. So I hope this was at least a little bit helpful, Ascension. Michael says, an important question. My sleep schedule right now is that I'm falling asleep around 4 or 5 a.m. I get decent sleep and it doesn't mess with my schedule. But now how can I modify this when my obligations in the future change? Oh, yeah, this is a good one. And, you know, what most people do is they try to go to bed earlier because they, you know, they need to shift their sleep patterns earlier. But that is very hard because you're not, it's kind of like somebody who usually falls asleep at 11 p.m. and somebody tells them, now you have to go to bed at, you have to sleep at 7 p.m. They simply can't do that. Their body's not ready for that. So you have to start with them in the morning and you wake up maybe an hour earlier every morning until you reach kind of your target wake up time. And then you let bedtime fall into place, you know, and the timelessness is always good, you know, so you can get up 1 hour earlier and then kind of stop checking the time, you know, sometime in the evening and just kind of follow your body's cues. And that I think is the best way to realign your sleep schedule. Okay, perfect. Let's go over this next question here from Lynn. This came in via Facebook. All your videos have been a lifeline for me in the last month or so since I discovered them. Super happy to hear this. I had already been practicing CBTI for almost 3 months, so I understand all the concepts. This one about embracing wakefulness, letting go, has me stumped, and I see I'm not alone. I think it's a very important one. My question is, can you give an examples of things to tell yourself while you are lying in bed waiting for sleep to come? Thoughts are impossible to control, but if I had a list of helpful thoughts, I think I could implement that. I'm doing sleep restrictions, so I'm only spending 6 hours a night in bed, and I'm usually walking dead by the time I fall into bed. I read and doze off, but if I shut off the light, I'm awake again. I average 2.5-3 hours sleep a night. I still go to work, exercise, and have an active life, but end up having a really hard time staying awake in the early evening. Thanks again to both of you for your dedication to us. Hopeless cases. There are no hopeless cases, which I already said to Lynn. And Lynn, you did really well. I know it. Okay. Also, I want to clarify that this time period that I'm struggling is usually after I fall asleep in my book 10 times and finally turn off the light only to be awake. I want to give sleep a chance to come rather than jumping up all the time. So I lay there. Just need some examples of things to tell myself to counteract the negative thoughts during that time. I feel like if I could calm myself with reasonable thoughts, sleep would come faster. Start to be a labor here. One more thought. I've noticed that doing CBTI requires a lot of support. LOL. It definitely does. Okay. I have three things, to comment on this. I'm writing them down. One's on CBTI. One is on, waiting, and one is on like those, let's call them security thoughts. And oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And one more with time frame here. Okay. So Lynn, here are my thoughts. And number one, I think I just want to point out that I think I no longer really practice CBTI. I think so much of my teaching has gone away from that I can't really call it that anymore. Maybe CBTI inspired. There's some teachings that I've kept from CBTI, mainly like education. But I think a real problem with CBTI is that tight sleep window, right? You only have 6 hours in bed, okay? And then you feel pressure to sleep. And so often it's like you kind of like head bobbing, can't keep your eyes open. You're like so sleepy. And then finally it's midnight and then you go to bed and ding, now you're wide awake. And that is like the Houdini effect. It's like the sleepiness just seems to vanish, but it's actually nothing mysterious about it. It's just suddenly you feel pressure to sleep because here we go, okay? It's countdown towards the sleep window and here, like now I gotta sleep. So makes it really difficult. So I think something that is super, super helpful. We already talked about it in this episode, a timeless night. Instead of like 6 hours, give yourself, you know, 7.5 maybe, but you know, you, let's say you get up at 6, then you say, okay, at 10:30, I'm just going to stop checking the time and do whatever I feel like. Much less pressure. Don't check the time. Don't monitor how much you sleep. Don't do the mental exercise of checking, you know, trying to know how much you slept and et cetera. The timeless night is really, really good. That is an important one. Talked about that one. Perfect. Talked about this one too. Now, you know, if you have ever boiled milk, you will know that when you stand over the pot and just look at it, it takes an eternity. But if you step out for like 1 second, boom, it's already like a boiled over mess, right? What does this teach us? Well, the experience of time can really, really, can be very, very different depending on what you do. Whenever you wait for something, it takes forever, which can be really frustrating. It's just not a nice experience. So don't ever wait for sleep. Because you mentioned that, Lynn, kind of what should I do when I'm waiting for sleep or I'm waiting for sleep? You know, if you ever think like that, like I think I'm just waiting for sleep, then you have to do something different. You can just think of something pleasant. You can read a book like you do. You can be in bed reading a book. Doesn't matter. Befriending wakefulness, as you know, is what really matters. But that's another point I wanted to make. You know, if you ever find yourself waiting for sleep, then better find something else to do. And when you look the other way, when you're not thinking about sleep anymore, it comes your way. But here's the important one. So I think the main question Lynn has here is, I have these kind of thoughts, worrisome, anxious thoughts that pop in my brain all the time. What kind of like alternative thought, what kind of like safety thought can I present to myself so these don't bother me? And, you know, you hear people mention that they have these, let's say, safety thoughts, and perhaps there are certain circumstances, I'm sure, when that can be helpful. But generally speaking, I don't think that's the way to go. And here's why. So when the brain's a safety machine, right? It always tries to keep you safe. It's a survival machine. So sometimes it has this idea that there's a problem, like with insomnia, it thinks that being awake is a problem. That's the perceived threat that it wants to try to escape. So it gives you these kind of warning messages that are meant to help you, right? Which is like, what if you can't? What if you go crazy? What if you lose your ability to sleep? What if you lose your job? What if this happens? What if that happens, right? Kind of gives you those ones. And then let's say you have a safety thought, which is like, that's impossible. Let's say sleep drive always wins, or I will fall asleep in the end. You know, those are kind of safety thoughts. They can help for some people, but what it often ends up doing is it's just bottling up the anxiety instead. You know, you use the safety thought to kind of escape the anxiety. You try to escape. You try to escape these warning signals from your brain. And when the brain's trying to warn you and you're basically not willing to hear it, guess what it does? It's like, what? You're not listening? I'm gonna make sure you hear this. I'm gonna send them louder. I'm gonna send them more often. I'm really gonna. So often this, what you're trying to do here, have some kind of like a safety thought, often leads to more problems, more anxiety, more racing thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the best way to do it is to listen to the brain, to tell the brain, okay, I'm willing to hear what you're saying, because then it has no reason to keep warning you, sending you these warning thoughts. So how do you listen? Well, two things that come to my mind is the daily thought download, which I'm a firm believer in, which is you pick up like 5-10 minutes a day, and then you just write down all these thoughts that typically come at night, and then you just show the brain that you know I'm listening. You know, you just write them down. And I think maybe even more powerful way is to be willing to go there. So let's say you have this thought of like, you're gonna lose your job if you don't sleep tonight. What if you lose your job, right? Then guess what you do? You imagine that happening. You imagine your boss calling you, sitting down in the office. They tell you the news. Sorry, you can't work here anymore. You walk out with the box with all your stuff in it. You tell your loved ones you lost your job. And guess what? When you are willing to experience X, you know, when you're willing to experience that thing your brain's trying to warn you about, when you're willing to experience X, if even just in your imagination, the brain has no reason to warn you about that anymore. And eventually, when you're just listening, it's like, okay, I don't need to warn you about that anymore. That's the way I believe. Lynn, hope you'll do really well. Stay in touch. Thanks for all the support. All right? Perfect. Let's see. Mr. Mustafa says, hi, Dan. I'm really suffering. I'm trying not to fear about sleeplessness, but I can't sleep. I'm going to be crazy. I'm really sorry to hear this, Mr. Mustafa. And you know, this this fear of going crazy is perhaps one of the most common ones. You know, I'm never saying anything to belittle anyone's fears, but know that, I don't know, half of the people I work with believe that they're going to go crazy, right? And, you know, it's always good to know that it's impossible. You know, you can't go crazy from insomnia, but as we just talked about, sometimes just telling yourself you can't go crazy, it's impossible to go crazy, it can almost seem like you're not listening to the brain. So oftentimes the best way to deal with kind of these fearful thoughts is what we just talked about, kind of being willing to listen to the brain and actually say, okay, I'm going to imagine going crazy. You know, I'm going to imagine that. I'm going to imagine going crazy. And then the brain is like, oh, I don't need to warn you about that anymore. And eventually it lets you go. Education, always super important, Mustafa. I don't know how much time you spent here, but check out the playlists there in the description of any new video. The Success Stories one and the This Is Not A Playlist, I think are really good. Hang in there. Jen says, the only way is through. 100%. You want to circumvent it, avoid it. It just becomes more powerful. Okay, let us continue here. We have two more questions that have come in here. Abdul, oh yeah. This is one of my current bedtime clients who wrote the following today. Hi Daniel, it's Abdul again. There is a lot of medical literature that poor sleep can exacerbate symptoms of anxiety and depression, but I think that has nothing to do with poor sleep, but believing in this will certainly exacerbate the symptoms, and that is my personal experience. Would love if you can answer this and make an education video on that aspect. Absolutely, and I transcribed this. I wrote this down from a message on my phone, so all the typos are mine, not Abdul's. Okay, so interestingly, we just talked about this actually with Michael Martin Reed, who was guesting the channel. And when you hear something like insomnia causes anxiety or insomnia causes depression, what typically has happened is one of two things. Either it's kind of a cross-sectional study where people are asked like, what's, you know, mental wellness problems do you have? And people say, I have this and this and that. And they say, oh, those people who had insomnia also tended to have more anxiety. Aha, there's a link between them. And then the link, when it's reported in media, suddenly seems like there's a causal link. One causes the other, which was never shown in that study. You know, it was just what people who had one had the other. And how surprising is it that if you have insomnia, you also have anxiety or vice versa? They're really, insomnia is a form of anxiety. So there's no surprise there. And how about depression? Well, guess what? They all come from the same place. You know, all our kind of like all the suffering that we lump into like what we call mental health today, which I like to call mental wellness, because I think that's much more what it is. It's like a wellness, like a mental wellness thing more than anything else. They come from a place of avoidance, of escapism, of trying to not experience something negative. And because the brain is developed to escape a perceived threat like a grizzly bear, and then it works great. The grizzly bear, you know, no longer a problem, perfect. When the brain tries to escape something like being awake at night, you get insomnia. When the brain tries to escape the emotion that we call anxiety, you get more of that. When the brain tries to escape the emotion that we call sadness, you become depressed, you know? So it's not like one causes the other. It is that they all come from that same place of avoidance, okay? So that was kind of one point I want to make. The other one is, of course, if you, on the other hand, like, you know, if you read that, if you have trouble sleeping, you're going to have this, then absolutely, it's more likely that you get that because you start thinking about that. You start anxiety. I don't want to have that. And then you start avoiding it even before you have it. And you have it, you know. So 100%. And we see this so much on this channel with people who are concerned that they have, sporadic fatal insomnia, they read about the symptoms and then suddenly they have them, right? So it's 100% that if you read about something, it's you're more likely to experience it. And just so I don't miss anything here, let's go back. We talked about that. So I think, yeah, I think we answered this, Abdul, and you know, I'll talk to you tomorrow, I'm sure, or soon thereafter. So any follow-up, let me know. I hope this was helpful. And with that said, let us jump to our last one, our last question for today. Actually, this is from John. This is a comment that just came in. I've been talking to John here on the YouTube channel today. And I think there were a couple of really good points we can make here that hopefully will help you, John, and anybody else. Let's read this. So to the context here is that John was talking to me about like having insomnia and then having cold symptoms, what to do. And he says, I will try to calm down, but this is my first time having a cold while having insomnia. So because of the unknown, I'm quite understandably worried. I've tried searching for info on how insomnia cope. I'm going to write down something here real quick. With a cold or fever and found nothing. Perhaps you can consider doing a video on this. Yes, absolutely. Here we are. There must have been people who went through the same and given insomnia is such a common problem and some people have had it for years, for decades. Surely they must have fallen ill while sleeping badly. How did they sleep during this time? Okay. One more thing. After writing about this 2 hours ago, I actually felt quite sleepy and went back to bed. Managed to sleep for like 20, 30 minutes maybe. Is this a good or bad thing? I'm sleeping after my wake up time. So I'm just going to write good, bad, question mark. I've been sleeping quite badly recently. I go to bed at 10:30 usually and would always wake up 1 hour or so later and then find it a bit hard to fall back asleep due to hyperarousal. I keep waking up to go to the bathroom thinking my bladder is full. Then it will be the same sleep after that in early morning. But exactly how much sleep I was getting, I'm unsure because I don't look at the clock. Any advice? Well, I think it's great that you don't look at the clock. It's hard to do. But I've written down... Okay, we took in that, good or bad. And then I think those are the two big ones. Okay, so firstly, I wanna say here that surely, A8 is thanks for the answer, anytime. Thanks for the support. Firstly, this one. Surely a lot of people who have had trouble sleeping have gone through colds during this period. And I think, you know, there are three ways that could have affected them. And one is that you feel like this cold, you're foggy, you're kind of sleepy. Oh, John is here live. Oh, cool. Hey, John. Perfect. So you can, you know, any follow-up questions, you can just post them live here. Okay. So either it you make foggy, you're tired, and you end up actually sleeping more, or you become stressed because you have a fever now and you're like, how is this going to affect my sleep? And you sleep less, or it's like it didn't really change anything. And how is it going to affect you? I don't know. I'm actually just now working with a client who in our self-coaching master program who shared that when she has a cold, she typically sleeps less. But the thing is that... the more you try to, like, insomnia loves attention, right? The more we try to figure it out, the more we think of what to do, the more we try to control things, etc., the more trouble we have. So when you go into this place of like, okay, I'm having a cold, now I'm going to have more trouble sleeping, what am I going to do? Well, you're basically doing the same thing that leads you to have insomnia in the first place, which is like trying to get control, which is completely understandable, 100% understandable. Absolutely. But, you know, I always want to teach people things that I think will lead to you sleeping better. So just knowing that the desire for control is always what leads you to having more trouble sleeping. And then when you try to kind of have some more control in the in this picture of having insomnia and now having a cold, well, then you're going to have even more trouble sleeping. And then looking on the internet for solutions always leads you down the rabbit hole, really, like 99% of the time anyway. So I think it's good to not try to look for the solution in general. I think it's good not to look for what other people have done when they have a cold. And I think it's good not to try to control the cold or the insomnia or that kind of extra insomnia you may have from a cold. I really think that's the way. It's hard. I know it's hard to do, but I really think that's the way. That was the number one thing I wanted to talk about. And the second thing was good or bad. So, you know, you slept a little bit more towards the early morning. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? It depends on the intent and how you think of it. Insomnia comes from a place of like trying to get as much sleep as you can, like kind of chasing sleep, wanting to get more, trying to get more, right? So if in the morning you wake up and then you're like, dang it, I didn't sleep much. Oh, I hope I get some more sleep. I'm going to rest here. Oh, and then you wake up, you slept. Yes, I slept 20 minutes. Amazing. That's such a win for me. I'm so happy. If you celebrate it like that, that will reinforce the narrative that not sleeping is bad and that you have to sleep more. So in that scenario, sleeping more in the morning was not good, okay? If it feels like a win, not good. On the other hand, if you wake up and you're kind of like, oh, I think I could sleep some more. I would really like that. Then you fall asleep and you wake up 20 minutes later. Oh, that was nice. Feel refreshed, but you don't think more about it. No problem, okay? So that is the key, how you like think about it. Really. Okay. I love this one actually. Frequently going to the toilet due to being unable to sleep, a sign of hyperarousal. 100%. It definitely is. You know, and I got really excited actually when I read what's it called? Hope and Healing for Your Nerves by Dr. Claire Weeks, because I had noticed this myself, that a lot of patients told me that they had to pee all the time, like literally like every 45 minutes sometimes. And there was very little pee there. I was told several times that when I started sleeping better, I didn't have to do that anymore. So I realized this is an anxiety symptom. It is a hyperarousal symptom. And Dr. Claire Weeks, she confirmed that for me, that she had also made that observation. It was on her list of like symptoms of nerves. She calls it, which we basically call anxiety too. So yeah. Symptom of hyperarousal. I don't really know why, to be honest with you, but definitely heard that many, many times. So I would say it is. Okay. Very well. John, I think I hope this helped. And I want to say thank you to you, John, and everybody else who submitted questions, who are here with us live. And anyone who likes the teaching here and feels like I want to get some more guidance, more accountability, then we offer here in our open classes. Then if you like kind of being with a group who's all kind of working towards the same goal, then check out our self-coaching master program on our webpage. We have 4 clients now. I think it is a great space. And there's an app for that too. And it's called Bedtime. And you are invited. Just download on the app store and you'll work with me. Okay. Thank you so much, and I will be back with more tomorrow. Until then.